invited.
You won't disturb. Come sit down.
We're going to make a lot of hay at Shavuos today. Quite literally. No, pun intended. One more sefer I need. So how many of you heard the story of Mount Sinai that became green overnight? Have you heard that story? No? Didn't tell you in nursery school that the reason we bring flowers home on Shavuos?
Everything
turned green and blossom, right?
Yeah.
You heard that story. What if I tell you that's not true?
No.
I have spent 4 days looking for the story. Does not Google. My friends, I'm pretty certain at this point that it does not exist. So where does this whole business of flowers and Shavuos come from? Where does it come from? And what's up with it? Now, how come in some shuls they have a forest and in some shuls they don't? You know what? Some shuls they have a big forest. They bring in trees. In some shuls you'll never see any trees. Fruits like apples? Fruit is something else. Fruit is bikur. We're going
to
talk specifically about flowers. So tonight's lecture is going to be about the custom, the widespread custom, of decorating the shul and the home with flowers and greenery. Where does that come from? What does it mean? Why do some people do it? Why do some people avoid doing it? This will be the focus of tonight's class. The Shavuot forest and shul. So let me tell you that firstly, this custom, although, as some maintain, is an ancient one, does not have any ancient sources. There are no ancient sources for this custom, meaning it's not mentioned outright anywhere in a Mishnah or a Braisa, not in the Gemara, not in the Geonim, not even in the writings of the Rishonim. The first time, the very first time there is documentation of something like this is in the father of the Ashkenazic Minhagim, Minhagei HaMaharil. The Maharil lives in the 14th century, 15th century. And the Maharil's writings, his records of the Minhagim, of the customs of the Jewish people living in Germany or in Alsace-Lorraine, become the foundation for all books of Minhagim, of customs, and manuals of Jewish life. And these manuals of Jewish life eventually give way to what's called the Mappa, to the book written by Rabbi Moshe Isserlish, who wrote a book that was like the Shulchan Aruch, and then he found out that a Sephardic rabbi named Rabbi Yosef Karo already wrote a Shulchan Aruch. So he just added his writings, his glosses, and he called it the tablecloth. So in the tablecloth, that's where this actually shows up in an ironclad way. So let me show you the earliest source. The earliest source is Minhagi Maharil. Maharil writes, quote, Noagim lahashtiach ritzpas beis hakneses bebisomim shel asovim. It is customary for us to kind of coat the floor, to spread across the floor of the synagogue aromatic grass, aromatic greens, ubishayshanim, and with roses. And he says, this is l'simchas haregel. This is for the joy of the holiday. That's all he says. Does not give us any reason, does not talk about Mount Sinai, does not talk about anything turning green. He doesn't mention anything about trees or tree branches. He says it's about aromatic herbs or aromatic greens and about roses. And it's done to make us happy on Shavuos. Now, there's a mitzvah of v'samachta b'chagecha in all the holidays, and Maharil does not mention anything about grass or roses about Pesach or on Sukkot. But that's what he says. Okay. Now, along with the Maharil, there are many books. Some of them I don't even have, so I have to be happy with Google and stuff that I printed off. There was a Sefer HaMinhagim, which is written by a quasi-student, but also quasi-peer of the Maharil. His name was Rabbeinu Yitzchak Isaac of Tirna, more often known as Isaac of Tirna. And he wrote a book called simply Sefer HaMinhagim, the Book of Customs. And in the Book of Customs of Isaac of Tirna, it says, and this is a quote, V'shotchin asavim, we spread grass, bebeis haknesses, in the shul, l'simcha, for joy. He leaves out roses, he leaves out aroma. Doesn't say anything about aroma. He just says grass. We spread grass on the floor of the shul, and we do that for joy. Now, he doesn't say marijuana, and we have no reason to assume that this, that the grass that's being talked about here has any kind of psychedelic properties. I don't know what he said, but supposedly it makes people happy. It doesn't say you smoke it, it says you put it on the floor. So you put grass on the floor, and that's supposed to make people happy. Doesn't explain, that's all we get. There's a Sefer, a collection of Minhagim, that's a little bit later than the Maharil, that was written by a disciple of a man who is known for his writings of something called Trumas Hadeshen. And this Sefer is called Leket Yosher. And over there, his verbiage, this is a quote, V'hayaminag bebeisayit, was the custom in the home of the Trumas Hadeshen. This is the first time we hear about somebody doing this at home. Up until now, we heard about it in Shul. We heard the Maharil tell us about aromatic grass and about roses. We have the Isaac Tirna, Sefer HaMinhagim, just speaking about grass and Shul. Whereas the Leket Yosher, a disciple of the Trumas Hadeshen, a very important rabbi in his time, talking, 14th century, 15th century rabbis, very, very important, very influential people, people whose writings and whose manuscripts and whose responsa form really the foundation of halacha, of Jewish law, as we observe it today. He says, in his house, it was his custom, lefazer asavim ubisamim, to spread grass and aromatic kinds of cloves, things like that, things of aroma, sources of aroma. And he would do so, the grass will be brought before Shavuos, and he would do so in the morning of Shavuos. There's also another book of early Minhagim of the Ashkenazim called Magli Tzedek, written by Rabbi Yamin Halevi, and over there it says, Be'erev Chag HaShavuos, La'is Erev, on the eve of Shavuot, Nogu L'shtech Sheishanim Va'asavim. It was customary to spread roses and to spread grass, good, nice grass, he says, beautiful grass, in the Beis HaKnesses, L'chvod HaTorah. In the Minhagim of Worms, which was documented in the 16th century, V'noigim l'hashtiach ritzbas beis haknesses ba'asovim, it is customary for us to spread on the floor of the shul grass, v'gam bebatim, and also in the homes. Oh, first time we're hearing about shuls and homes. And v'gam hashamash tekea sheshanim l'chol moireinu. The shamash will go and hand out flowers or stick flowers into all the leaders, all the teachers. And this is all done l'simchas haregel, and for the honor of the Torah, and we have a number of other sources like this. One source of the Minhagim and Worms speaks about the rabbi of the shul getting two roses, and the head of the court getting three roses, and everybody else getting one rose, and there seems to be a business of everybody getting roses. It doesn't say rose in the lapel, but it says roses. I don't know. Anyway, these are the earliest sources. There are no earlier sources, at least not any overt, obvious sources, although it would seem that this would have to come from somewhere. So there are many things in Judaism which were not documented until a certain time. These writings are minhagim. The people who wrote these things down were writing the minhagim. They're writing the customs that they observed. Minhag Yisrael, Torahi, a custom of Israel is Torah. They were writing down the things they observed, the things they were aware of. So the fact that there isn't an earlier source doesn't mean it wasn't being done before. This was not their idea. They said, this is what we saw our parents, our grandparents, previous generations do. All right. In the Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Karo, it is not mentioned at all. In the Tur, it's not mentioned. In the Rambam, it's not mentioned. In the Rosh, in the Rif, nowhere in any of these sources is it mentioned. However, the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Tov Tzadik Dalad, chapter 494, he says in the third subsection of that chapter, after we hear about the idea of not saying Tachnun, not saying penitential prayers during the festival and subsequent to the festival, the Ramah adds, And I quote, "V'noyegim l'shtoyach asovim, it is customary for us to spread grass b'shavuos, b'beis ha'knesses, u'b'batim, in homes, in the shul and in the homes, zecher l'simchas matan Torah, as a memory for the joy of the giving of the Torah." So what the Rama clearly did here is that Rama had sources or was aware of some who had a custom to do it at home and some who had a custom to do it in shul. The Rama puts both of these together. He doesn't say shul. He says, bebeit knesset ubebatim. He doesn't mention anything about aroma. He doesn't mention anything about roses. He just used the term greenery. He says it was their custom to spread greenery. There was greenery in the shul and in the homes. And he doesn't say l'simchas haregel, for the joy of the festival, which is the verbiage of the Maharil. He says l'simchas haregel. He says zecher l'simchas matan Torah, as a memory of the joy of matan Torah. The Magen Avraham discusses this, and he adds something very interesting. Magen Avraham says, what do you do if Shavuos is on Sunday? Oh, it is on Sunday this year. What do you do then? He says, so then we have to make sure to do it before Shabbat comes, because you wouldn't be able to handle this on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. Then he adds the following. He goes through a whole discussion, back and forth, when you do it, and he says, Noyagin Lahamed Ilonis. This is the first time we ever hear this. Magen Avraham, we're talking late 16th century. He says it is customary to have trees put up in the shul, bebeit haknesset ubebatim, in the trees and in the homes, in the shul and in the home. V'nidali hatam, he says, the reason that we should have trees or branches of trees, sheyaskiru, so we should remember, sheba'atzeres nidunim kol peres ha'ilan, that like the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us, in page 16, the Gemara says there that the fruits of the tree, not the tree, but the fruits of the tree, get judged which fruit will reach fruition and who will not. And since the fruits get judged, people get judged on Rosh Hashanah. Trees get judged on Tu B'Shvat. Fruits get judged on Shavuos. And since fruits get judged on Shavuos, v'yispalu lo aleim, we should pray for the welfare of the fruit, in other words, for a good harvest. Well, no. Bikurim is when we actually bring the firstling fruits.
No, but it's the antecedent for
it. It can be an antecedent for Bikurim. Bikurim is a mitzvah in the Torah. This is a Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah.
In terms of practice, it's an antecedent.
It could be an antecedent in being our prayer, so we should have good Bikurim next year.
That's what I mean.
Maybe. Perhaps. So now we know that not only was it customary to have greenery or roses, but now we know from the Magen Avraham that it was also customary to actually put up branches of trees. And why are we putting branches of trees? So we should be reminded to pray for the fruits. It doesn't say you should have fruits. Doesn't say. So there's a big discussion about this, if it was fruit tree and not fruit tree. And the upshot seems to be that the branches are there as a reminder. So you don't need the actual fruits. The point is you have tree branches, and tree branches remind us that trees give fruits. So, simple as that. This seems like all like a very big mystery. We don't know what's so joyous about this. We don't know where this custom comes from. We don't understand what this custom is about, except that it's supposed to be joyous. I understand that if it's aromatic, it's nice. I get roses. I don't understand what plain grass is about. Just throwing grass on the floor. What's so joyous about that? And the Rama even adds, Zecher, L'simchas Matan Torah, as a memory for the Simcha of Matan Torah. So the Machtzis HaShekel says, take a look in the Levush. Now the Levush is a disciple of the Rama and the Maharshal. The Levush wrote a commentary on the Tur, much like the Shulchan Aruch. He was planning to write a Shulchan Aruch too. He actually printed his book, and he called it Levush Achur. That's all of his books are written of his garments, and that's a story in and of itself. He has many garments. I think it's 8 or 10 different garments. But the garment, the purple garment, Levush Achur, is the garment that he wrote to dress up the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a garment, not a tablecloth, a garment for the Shulchan Aruch. So in the Levush Achur, and Siman Tav Tzadik Dalet, the Levush brings down the words of the Rambah verbatim. And then he says, Shahoyu asavim saviv har Sinai, because there was grass around Mount Sinai. How do we know there was grass around Mount Sinai? He doesn't say there was grass on Mount Sinai. He doesn't say Mount Sinai turned green. He says there was grass around Mount Sinai. How do we know that? He says, what do you mean? If in the Torah it says, in Parshas Kisisa, in Exodus 34, it says, Gamatzayin v'habakar al yiru, that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu that nobody should go on the mountain. And not only no one should go on the mountain, but also sheep and cattle should not graze in front of the mountain. So if there was nothing to graze on, would Hashem have to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, tell them not to eat the sand? They're in the desert. Moshe, very important. Make sure you don't bring your sheep to eat sand. So obviously, there must have been, Shema Amina, from here we hear, Shahaya Shamira, that there must have been some kind of foliage. There must have been some kind of greenery. Ah, if there must have been some kind of greenery, he says maybe that's what we're trying to bring to memory. Now, he doesn't say anywhere that this is because it miraculously appeared. He just seems to say that there was some greenery there. This is the closest I found to that urban legend that everybody knows about, that the mountain turned green overnight. This is the closest I found. All it says is that al yiru el mul hahar, they shouldn't graze in front of the mountain. Now, just for the record, I did go and try to research and find anything about the mountain, because the first time we hear about grazing near the mountain is actually with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he is the shepherd for his father Yisro, in the beginning of the book of Exodus, in the third chapter, we hear about Moshe Rabbeinu vayinai gesatzoin achar hamidbar. He's taking his sheep after the desert, and then on the way taking his sheep after the desert, vayaveh haro lekim. He comes to the mountain of God. This, of course, is the future mountain of God, and that's where he sees the burning bush. So the Medrash HaChefet says, he brought them to Mount Sinai to give them grass? So the Medrash says, no. La'achayrav, behind, like yonder, over the mountain. She'yesh amira tevenoah. You know, it seems like away from the desert, there was good grazing grounds. But he went near the desert, k'dei la'archikon min ha'gezel. So it doesn't even seem from the writing of our sages that there was actually grass even near the mountain. It seems there was grass somewhere after the desert. I don't know what the Levush's source is, but okay, Levush says it. It must be so. But at any rate, he's indicating that there was grass around the mountain, and that's why we should be putting grass in the shul to remember there was grass in the mountain. It doesn't take a very active mind to say, why would we have to remember this? It must have been an anomaly. Maybe there wasn't grass anywhere else. Aha, it must be that it turned green, so that's why we're bringing the grass in. But that's as close as you get, my friends. There is nothing more direct. Now here's the interesting thing. Since the Levush is a disciple of the Rambam himself, it is reasonable to assume that probably the Levush is kind of explaining his Rebbe, or maybe even telling us what his Rebbe said. Maybe this is what the Rambam said. For whatever reason, he didn't write it in the Shulchan Aruch, but maybe that's what he actually said, and the Levush is simply documenting that. Maybe. Well, that's what the Machzis HaShekel seemed to think, because the Machzis HaShekel said, you're looking for a reason? Look in the Levush, you'll find a reason. However, I must tell you that the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch, in this very same chapter in Tov Tzadik Dalet, the Alter Rebbe comes along and he says, in Seif Yudalet, in subsection 14, he says, V'noyag l'shtoyach hasovim v'beit ha-kneset u'bebatim, it is customary to spread greens in the synagogue and in the homes, b'shavuot zecher l'simchas matan Torah. That is a direct quote from the Rambam. And then he goes on to talk about the Magen Avraham talked about. He says, if you're allowed to handle it on Yom Tov, or not allowed to handle on Yom Tov, and what you do, Shabbos comes before, and so on and so forth. He really says, you could handle it on Yom Tov, but if Shabbos comes before, it's better to do it before Shabbos. All right, fine. He never mentions what the Levush said. He does not give us any reasons. He doesn't add, the Alter Rebbe comes after the Levush. So if the Levush was presumably filling in what the Rama wrote, or the Rama omitted, the Alter Rebbe then should have said, V'neigim l'shteach ha-savim b'es ha-knesses, zeche l'simchas matan teira, as a remembrance of the joy of Matan Torah, which is not really understood, at least nobody I spoke to understands it. Why does grass remind us of the joy of Matan Torah? Nobody knows. But the Levush is giving a reason, because there was grass there. And then you could imagine, even though Levush doesn't write that, aha, maybe it was miraculous grass. So maybe it was miracle greens, which doesn't say that. But maybe you could imagine that. And that would be a really good reason. It was so joyous, the Torah was being given, ha! And the mountain turned green. Alter Rebbe doesn't say it. And if you remember from our previous class, when we talked about the business of milchiks, about eating dairy foods, the Alter Rebbe said, Har beitaimim nemru alav. There are many reasons for this mitzvah, for this minhag. There are many reasons for this custom. He does not give any other reason than the Rama. The reason is, Zeichel simchas matan teira. Full stop. The Alter Rebbe does not proceed, and he does not quote the Levush. And since he doesn't quote the Levush, it's reasonable to say that he did not agree with him. Or did not feel this is a valid reason. Which leads us back at square one. We don't know why we're doing this. We know this was a custom. It seems some maintain it was an ancient custom. It is logical that it was an ancient custom. But we do not have a source for it. And we do not have a reason for it. And we also haven't talked at all about why some people don't do this. Since it's an open halacha and shulchan aruch.
In those days, we're not exactly coming from Olympia.
What was the floor made of? I don't know the answer to that question.
No, the floors usually were regular ground.
I don't know if that's correct. But if the assumption is that the floors were dirt floors, which I don't think is correct, I was in Europe and I went to many of the synagogues, and the ones that survived are a few hundred years old. We don't find sand floors over there. People had in their homes, poor people in villages. Villagers lived in sand floors in their homes. But people who lived in cities and urban settings, in all likelihood, had wood floors. In all likelihood. We're not talking about the urban settings. We're not talking about little, tiny, tiny towns. We're talking about the people, all of these rabbis mentioned, all lived in very urbane settings. Whether they lived in Worms, whether they lived in Krakow. There were some who lived in smaller places, but the assumption that this is about a reason to cover the ground because the ground was earth is a very weak assumption. And then it shouldn't only be with Shavuot. It should be for Pesach too. And why not do Sukkot also? In fact, you should do it every Shabbat. Maybe you should just get a floor. It should be a new halacha. Install floors for Shavuos. Maybe 50% off the floors. Now, it's really telling over here to notice that the Maharil speaks about aroma. He speaks about aromatic grass. And he speaks about roses. He's talking about flowers. And he says it's the Simchas HaRegel, which actually makes sense. It makes sense. You dress it up. You dress up the shul. But the Rama doesn't even mention that. The Rama doesn't mention anything about Shoshanim, nothing about flowers. He doesn't even mention aroma. And he says it's L'Zecher. It's some kind of memory of the joy of Matan Torah. Yes, we do have flowers in weddings. This is true.
And that's not to remember some flowers that were at some ancient time.
Again, I'm emphasizing for you that it would be very, very clear if we followed the Maharil, just use what the Maharil wrote, that would be pretty easy to swallow. It brings joy. Why they wanted to have joy with regard to Shavuot more so than the other holidays, it's not so hard to understand that. There's a famous Gemara that tells us that on Shavuot, we're obligated to have joy even in a material sense. Other times we can get away just with spiritual joy, but Hakol Moedim, everybody agrees that on Shavuos Be'inon Lechem, you have to actually have a good meal and you have to actually enjoy the pleasures of life. And the way Chassidus explains that, because the whole notion of Matan Torah is that holiness is not in the heaven, but holiness is found on earth. It's not so hard to develop a philosophy of jurisprudence as to why that would bring joy and why that might be unique to Shavuos. But the Rama's words are that it's a zecher. It's a zecher to Matan Torah. That it's not actually to make us joyous now are very compelling. Now, and if he would say aroma, that would make sense. If he would say roses, that would make sense. He just says grass. Just says grass. And the Magen Avraham says, not just grass. Trees too. It's just green. It doesn't say anything about aroma. And we see that sometimes we're emphasizing, some sources emphasize the home. Some sources emphasize the synagogue. Rama says both, home and synagogue. It's very, it's interesting. Okay, so how do we understand this business? So there is, I did find brought down, somewhere fascinating. I'll add one more detail. Rav Yankiv Emden, the Yavetz, he writes in his Siddur, now we're going already late into the 16th century. He says, Noyegim l'shteach hasavim zeicher l'matan Torah, shoye bahar yoruk. He says, it is customary to spread the grass as a memory of Matan Torah, which was on a green mountain. So this is compelling. This is the closest you get to that nursery school legend. This is Rabbi Yankiv Emden. This only shows up very late, okay? We're talking 16th century now, very late. Rabbi Yankiv Emden says, like it says, al yiru el mul haharahu. They shouldn't eat close to that mountain. The truth is that from the scripture, what he says is not at all necessarily so. Because it doesn't say they shouldn't graze on the mountain. It says, al yiru el mul haharahu. They shouldn't graze around the mountain. So the Levush was careful not to say the mountain is green. The Levush said around the mountain was green. And he says, because it says, don't have them graze around the mountain. But the Yankiv Emden took the liberty of saying the mountain itself is green. I don't know. Some details have mazel because this took off and everybody seems to know about it. And everybody seems to talk about it. This became the de facto reason. But the sources, the footing is very, very weak. There is a sefer called Medrash Talpiyos. And the Medrash Talpiyos sends us off to a fascinating story in the Bible. And the fascinating story in the Bible goes back to the days of our father Jacob when he is first building a family. And when he's first building a family, working for his rotten father-in-law Laban, at that time there was, let's just say, less than peace in the home. Two sisters, Rachel and Leah, and they were not happy. At least Rachel wasn't happy. She didn't have children. Leah wasn't happy. She felt she didn't have a husband. And it wasn't a good situation. And then the Torah records this fascinating little detail that Reuven went to the field and he was looking for flowers. And he found flowers. He brought him the flowers. The Dudayim flowers. And Rachel saw the flowers. Can I have your flowers? And Leah says, now you want to take my flowers too? I took my husband. You get the flowers also? You can't have it all. And Rachel says, okay, fine. So you take Yaakov. Give me the flowers. There's a lot to talk about. What was she thinking? Why'd she give away flowers? But he says, do you know what the Alshich, who was the most profound preacher or darshan of the 16th century, says on this pasuk? He says, Vayelech Reuven b'yemei tzir chitim. Reuven went in the days when they were cutting wheat. So when could that be? When is the days of cutting wheat? It has to be Erev Shavuos. Why does it have to be Erev Shavuos? Because on Pesach we cut barley. And on Sukkot nothing is being cut. Everything was cut a long time ago. So Erev Shavuos, this is Erev Shavuos, he says, Sha'anu mitzuvim, that we find ourselves in the Torah, we're commanded, Liktzer chitim, that we should be cutting wheat. But oifen shahalayla, that the night, shehu leil shavuos, the night of shavuos, which is also the night of Matan Torah. So on the night of Matan Torah, we are cutting. We're cutting wheat, Erev Shavuos. So it's going to be ready. The barley was brought on Pesach. Barley matures, correct. Barley matures earlier. Wheat does not mature until Shavuot. On Pesach, we bring an offering, a meal offering, a mincha from barley. We count 7 weeks, and then we bring a meal offering from the wheat. When do we cut that wheat? On Erev Shavuot. Because you got to make it into flour for the next day. Says the Alshech, Vayelech Reuven b'yemei tzir chitim. Reuven went to collect flowers. And the Torah emphasizes, when was that? In the time of Ktzir Chitim, that it's Erev Shavuos, it's a night of Shavuos. Ulefi zeh, says the Alshech, it must be that on the night that Rachel was supposed to be with Yaakov was the night of Shavuos. Night of Shavuos. And what happened instead? Instead, Leah was with Yaakov. And who did she become pregnant with that night? Yisachar. And what is Yisachar great in? In Torah. Yisachar was the tribe that studied Torah. So when was the tribe that studied Torah conceived? On Shavuos, of course. Now, let's talk. So he says there's a link here between Shavuos and flowers. In fact, it's the only time in the entire Torah there's a discussion of flowers. Somebody cutting flowers. You remember any other time there's a discussion of flowers? The only biblical reference to flowers is Reuven cutting flowers. So I decided to do a little research over here. So, flowers. I wonder what the flowers were. So Rashi says it was jasmine. Ramban is very unhappy with this for a number of different reasons. And he says they were aromatic flowers. He says you make a bracha b'rei isve b'samim. These are aromatic greens. And then he says, Ramban says, I'm pretty sure they were yavruchin. And yavruchin have a good smell. And what are yavruchin? So the commentary on Ramban says that this is what we call a rose. In other words, Reuven cut roses. If somebody brought home flowers for Shavuos, what's the answer? Reuven brought home flowers for Shavuos. Several hundred years before the Jewish people even existed as a nation. And Ramban says they were roses. So we have this business of Shoshanim. Then he says something else. He says another possibility is that there was some kind of fruit on this, and they were kedmus tapuchim, that they were in the image of apples. Ulahem reach tov, and apples have a beautiful scent. So Ramban talks about roses and apples. Roses and apples, which according to Alshech is happening on Erev Shavuos. Let's see what Rabbeinu Bechaya, who oftentimes expands where Ramban leaves off. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that this jasmine, this mandrakes, or whatever they called, whatever they were like a fruit. He says that they were like apples with a beautiful smell, aromatic apples. And he says the real reason that Reuven brought them home for his mother is so that she should enjoy the aroma, the smell. Conversely, the Sepharno says that it was not apples, but rather it was min esev, a kind of grass, a kind of green that has tov hareach, that has a beautiful, sorry? I don't know what it's called. I know what the Sepharno says. It says it's greens that have aroma. And he says, Hadudoyim nosnu reach. This is a quote from Shir Hashirim. And he says, this is what it was. So we have the business of apples. We have a business of roses. And we have a business of aroma. So now listen to this. In the book of Esther, in the third chapter, Haman makes the case for genocide. He says, we need to get rid of these people. These Jews, they're just trouble. They don't care about you, Achashverosh. They don't care about your kingdom. It's really no skin off anybody's back to just get rid of them. So let's do it. And he makes the case. So there's a Targum Sheni. There's a Targum, like the Targum, which is on all of the scripture. And then there's a Targum Sheni. A Targum Sheni, the secondary Targum, is really Midrashic interpretation. Right, you could see, like, if the Targum is if one line, the Targum Sheni could be 15 lines. It's a lot of Medrash. And some of the longest Targum Sheni Medrashim are to be found on the words V'datehem Shonot Mikol Am. Their rules or their religion is different than everybody else. Now, the Targum Sheni is written in Aramaic, so at some point, there's something called Patshegen Haksav, the secondary writing, which is the Hebraic translation of the Targum Sheni. Now, in the Targum Sheni, he goes through all the holidays. He goes through the whole year. He says, this is what they do on Pesach, and this is what they do on Shavuos, and this is what they do in the summer, this is what they do in the spring. And part of what he says is they're always on vacation, these people. They're the most lazy people in the world. They're not industrious. The economy will not suffer. We'll just get rid of him, that's all. And in case there'll be any loss to the economy, Haman says, I'm ready to make it up with my own personal wealth. Says the Pascheg, and listen to this. This could blow your socks off. Says, B'chodesh Sivan, in the month of Sivan, Oysim Shnei Yomim Tovim, they make two days of Yom Tov outside of Israel. Ubayim Lebatei Knesiyot Shalehem, they come to their synagogues. V'kodim Shema, they read the Shema, Mispalim. V'kodim B'sifrei Teresayim, they read the Torah. Yeah, we do that on Shavuos. Read the Ten Commandments. Umetargimim B'nevi'eim, they read over their Navi. Umekalalim L'melech U'lasarim, then they curse the king and his officers. And what do they call that holiday? They call it Shavuot. Atzeret HaShavuot. And then listen what the Paschagin says. V'oilim al gag beis ha-knesses. This is purportedly what Haman is, Haman's reportage. Okay? Hamanic reportage of what the Jewish people are doing before the miracle of Purim. They go on the roof of the Beit HaKnesset, umefazrin shoshanim v'tapuchim. And they throw around roses and apples. Umalaktem, and then they collect them. V'ainun, they say, k'shem sh'anu malaktem ha-shoshanim v'tapuchim, just like we're collecting the roses and the apples, ha'ila kocha yislaktu b'neihem mi b'neinu. So too we may be separated from those around us. So the Targum Sheni seems to indicate that in the time of Purim, there was something with apples and roses. It's a very compelling coincidence, eh?
When was it written?
The Targum Sheni? I don't know. But it's like the genre of Medrash. It's very old.
Approximately
17 centuries ago? 16 centuries ago? Somewhere around it, maybe earlier. Now, the interesting thing is that in the actual Aramaic, it doesn't say roses. At least not that I said. It says the mislaktin chizuri tapuchim. It says they spread around apples. I don't see the word roses here. But in the Hebrew translation, which is also very old, it says roses and apples. So this is a very, you know, compelling kind of possibility that this has something to do with the first time Shavuos is ever mentioned. Shavuos in the Torah is an agricultural festival. It celebrates the agriculture of Israel. And the first time we hear about Yemek Tzir Chitim is in the days of Yaakov Avinu. And there's flowers, and there's greens, and there's apples, and there's roses. And the way the Mepharshim explain it. So, could this be the earliest source? Possibly. I don't know. But one thing is certain. It goes back in a very ancient way. It has a very early source. And it was a custom by Yidden. Now, I told you that it was only a custom really in the Ashkenazic world, but I did find that in the Kaf HaChaim, who was the chief rabbi of Baghdad, that here he brings down in the laws of Shavuos, he says that there was a custom, and it seems that this is from a Sephardic source, lefazer alei v'rodin bein sifrei Torah shebehechel, to throw rose petals between the Torahs in the Ark. Now, anybody here have been to a Persian wedding? A Jewish Persian wedding? At a certain point, everybody goes nuts and they tear off all the petals of the flowers. It's like wild. The first time you're there, you think something happened. And then they pelt the chasen and kala with the petals of the flowers. Right? And it's a beautiful custom that has many rich symbolisms in it. But here's the point. Here we have the chief rabbi of Baghdad telling us that it was customary to throw rose petals between the Sifrei Torah. So the Aron Kodesh, in other words, had a beautiful aroma, a rose aroma. So we have a cross-reference to a Sephardic custom, which also seems to indicate flowers on Shavuot, around the Torah, and then put it all together with everything we talked about tonight. So that's pretty interesting. This could be like a source in the Sephardic tradition where we also see flowers and greenery.
Iraqi is not Sephardic.
Iraqi is not Sephardic, if you say so. Let's just say that the chief Sephardic rabbi of Israel, at least twice was Iraqi. And the Kaf HaChaim is considered to be a Sephardic sage. So I don't know about the subtle nuances of Sephardic or Mizrahi, but it's generally speaking seen in a, you know, broad way. Germany is not France. France is not Austria, and Austria is not Poland. But it's called Ashkenazic.
Yeah,
okay.
Germany is only Germany for a very recent few years.
Oh no, my friend. Yeah, that may be, but Jews were living in Bavaria some 22 centuries ago and earlier.
I'm sorry.
Jews were living in Bavaria.
Oh, Jews, that's something
Okay, so there were Jews living in Germany. Doesn't matter what, regardless of what you call it, there were Jews living in that geography. Mm-hmm. And those are minhagim, are very ancient minhagim. Okay, so we seem to have established that there's a minhag. We're not exactly sure what the minhag comes from. This is not uncommon. In many minhagim, you saw many customs of the Jewish people, customs, we had customs, and then we said, okay, how did this happen? Where did it come from? What were the reasons? Once upon a time, people didn't ask reasons. Your mother said, you do this, you do this. Your father said, this is what we do. Okay, fine. Centuries went by. People said, why are we doing this? So then this started. That's when the documentation of minhagim starts. And when documentation of minhagim begins, which is usually earliest is the 11th or 12th century, the earliest documentation, really documentation of minhagim begins only in the 13th and 14th century. So that's where you have all of a sudden reasons for why this minhag might have come. It's not different than our class previously about the dairy foods, where the earliest sources we could find were in the 12th century. And people were asking. Rabbi Avigdor Tzfartit, he said, Makshim, many people are asking me, why are we eating milk, dairy on Shavuot? What are we doing this for? And he said, I think maybe I find the Bible code that could answer it. It was, well, he didn't say, he didn't dismiss it, and say, ah, it's some kind of crazy thing, forget about it. He said, it's a minhag, we accept it, we're not sure 100% why, let's try to figure out the reason. In other words, the notion is that if our sages, our ancestors established something, they had good reason for it. That's what we received. We receive it, and we revere it, and we treasure it. And as educated Jews, we also want to know where it comes from. Okay. So this is the sort of, I created you a background, the panorama. I gave you some interesting details, the history, the development, possible reasons. And now what if I tell you that a man came along in the 18th century, or end of 17th century, and he said, we're not doing this anymore. We're not doing this anymore. Not a good custom. And he shut it down. A custom that the Ramah writes about, a custom that the Magen Avraham talks about, in halacha. The Levush talks about in halacha. A custom that's discussed by the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Vilna Gaon came along, and he said, no good. We're not doing this anymore. Shut it down. And guess what? We don't do it. We don't do it. You ever seen a Chabad synagogue with trees? You won't find it. There are synagogues like it. They will not. It's not minhag Chabad. Even though the Alter Rebbe himself speaks about it in Shulchan Aruch. And the question, of course, is what in heaven is going on here?
Why?
Why? Excellent question. There's a sefer called Ma'aser Rav. Ma'aser Rav is a collection of the minhagim of the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon had many, many unusual practices. In fact, one very well-versed Litvish scholar told me that the vast majority of the Vilna Gaon's customs were not followed by anybody in Vilna even. He said in Vilna he had a small group of diehards and they followed his customs. And the people didn't necessarily follow his customs. They revered the Vilna Gaon as a great genius, great Torah. They didn't follow his customs necessarily. I'll give you two examples. The Vilna Gaon only took two matzahs on the night of Pesach. You know anybody who does that? I don't know anybody who does that. I'm sure there are some people who follow the Vilna Gaon's practice. He took two matzahs, not three matzahs. This is like ancient. Two matzahs. Customs had accumulated, and the Vilna Gaon came along, and he shook out all the cobwebs. Ah, this custom, that custom. He sorted them out. They said, this is the customs we're going to keep. He took out the Shema from the beginning of the Siddur. And the reason it was put in there was because it was a time that the Shema was outlawed. So our sages, they snuck the Shema into something called Tfilat HaShachar. So at least they could still say Shema and Shul, because they weren't allowed to say Shema later. So really, he's right. There's no reason to say the Shema over there. The Shema belongs later on, after Birchat Kirshma. So the Vilna Gaon said, take it out. But remember, Jews have been doing this for centuries. And we generally don't subtract, we only add. So if we added that, we went back to saying Shema, and kept the Shema there too. He took that out too. Nobody I know doesn't say that first Shema. So the Vilna Gaon had many, many things which people, you know, people heard what he said and they respected him, but they didn't necessarily follow him. And yet, this ruling of the Vilna Gaon seems to have become accepted in a very, very wide swath of the Jewish world, and it took traction. In the Sefer Ma'aser Rav, he says, "B'shavuos ein lahamid ilanos." Do not put up trees. She'eini el haminog, because it's only a custom. So what? Minhag Yisrael is a custom. He says, v'lei midina, it's not a rule. So? Oh, he says, v'achshav, and now, chok ha'amimu, it became the practice of the nations around us. And because of that, we should do away with it. There's a principle called B'chukotehem lo telechu. We're not permitted to follow their customs. And so, it has nothing to do with a Christmas tree. Because the Christmas tree is ancient. Only it wasn't Christian originally. It was originally Norse and pagan and Celtic. And it's a winter festival and so on and so forth. But the Gentiles have been decorating trees and bringing trees in before there were people who were Christians. So to say that the Vilna Gaon says va'achshav chayka amim, and now it is chayka amim, everybody assumes the Vilna Gaon means Christmas trees. It makes absolutely no sense to say that, especially because the custom was not to bring a whole tree into the shul. There is no shuls in the world that bring trees in; they bring branches in, not trees. So, and anyway, what a custom of what other people do in December, how would that affect what we do in June? It's like, it has no connection whatsoever. The Chai Odom, which is written by Reb Chaim of Volozhin, a disciple of the Vilna Gaon, he writes in his book called Chai Odom, a collection of halacha, in Klal Kuf Lamed Aleph, he says, Hagro bitl minag lahamed ilonis batzeres. The Vilna Gaon cut this down. He shut it down. The Chochma Sodom in Klal Peites, he says, Umitam ze, because of this reason, in other words, following in the ways of the nations, Osar hagra lahamed ilonis. The Vilna Gaon forbade the placing of branches of trees, b'chag ha-shavuos. Kivon shekein nohag b'chag shalahem, because that's what they did in their festivals. What is the Vilna Gaon talking about? So, I did a little research. And then I find there's a good friend of mine named Rabbi Issazam Weisberg who did a little research on this too. And he wrote a whole 30-page compilation on this. And guess what? It's nothing to do with a Christmas tree. It has to do with the way the Ukrainian church began to celebrate Pentecost. So Pentecost is a Christian festival. And according to the Christian rite, as Dr. Google taught me, the Christians believed that on this day, tongues of fire came down on the disciples of the founder of their faith, and they were talking in tongues. They got some inspiration. Now, the tongues of fire are remarkably similar to the lightning of Har Sinai, and yes, we all got revelation. Not some of us, all of us got revelation. That was 3,331 years ago this year, not 1,900 years ago. But anyway, when is Pentecost celebrated? Pentecost is in the image of Shavuot. Just as Easter is a knockoff of Pesach, and you can twist it and turn it any which way you want, but it comes from Pesach. The ideas come from Pesach. It's a Christian version of Passover. Guess when Pentecost is celebrated? Exactly 50 days later. In other words, it is the Christian version of Shavuot. And Pentecost means 50. Pent means 5. It's 550. Just like Shavuos means weeks. So it seems that at a certain time, and I didn't memorize this exactly Ukrainian words, but the Ukrainian church at a certain point decided to start decorating the church on Pentecost with tree branches and flowers, which is very possible, taken from us. They went to see how the Jews celebrated Shavuot to say, okay, how should we celebrate Pentecost? Because after all, it's in the image of Shavuot. What do they do? And when I Googled this a little more, I found that in certain parts of Europe, Christians have a custom of eating, you guessed it, dairy food on Pentecost. Gee, I wonder where that comes from. Now, this seems to have been a development, and I'm no expert in Christianity, but it seems to have been a development in the Ukrainian church in the 18th century or in the 17th century. And because it seems that the Vilna Gaon observed this, the Vilna Gaon said, aha, so they're celebrating a holiday like Shavuos with flowers and trees? Then in that case, we'll leave the flowers and trees behind.
The logic here is a flaw.
Really?
The flaw is that if the other nations adopt our customs, then we are to drop them.
Patience. There is a famous Russian or Ukrainian rabbi who was the rabbi of a city called Kharki, which I think is also Ukraine. His name was Chaim Shimon Doiv. Chaim Shimon Doiv wrote a compilation, a commentary on the Tzava, on the Testament of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, which comes from the 9th century, 10th century. And this, well, he was a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek. This is a 19th century rabbi, a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek, and he wrote a sefer called Shivim Tmarim. And in his sefer called Shivim Tmarim, he explains what the Vilna Gaon meant. And he says, Kama dvarim matzinu. We find many things, shahayanoye gabon, that we used to do, and we stopped doing because it became chok avodah zarah. It became a part of another religion's rites and rituals. Because it became rites. Exactly. No problem, then we leave it behind. Where do we see this? In the most profound way. He says we see this in the most profound way with regard to the notion that Yaakov Avinu, on the future side of the Beis HaMikdash, sets up a matseva, a monument. And do you know that the Torah prohibits the setting up of monuments? Only a mizbeach made of many stones, but never one large stone? But Yaakov Avinu set up a stone first. He says, yes, but it became, they copied Yaakov. When they saw what Yaakov did, set up a stone and pour oil all over it, they said, oh, he knows what he's doing. If he's doing this, this became a basic pagan rite. And when they made it into a rite, we stopped doing it. Torah comes along and says, Le'sokim l'cha matzeva. And the Medrash says, they established doing it this way, we will no longer do it.
So if they're not the shul, that's it?
No. First of all, nobody... No, nobody's adopting kashrut. it's way too difficult. Nobody, have no fear. Here's the point. The point is, if they take a din, a halacha, that's not a question. That's what the Vilna Gaon said. It's a minhag, not a din. If it will be a din, it's a din. A din is a din. A rule is a rule. Rules don't change. If Christians stop putting on tefillin, stop putting on tefillin? Of course not. If Muslims start eating matzah on Pesach, we stop eating matzah? Of course not. But here's a minhag. It's a custom. Forget that we don't even know the reason for this custom. At the end of the day, it's a custom. And we have a mitzvah in the Torah that says we are not trying to create a mixing and a melding of different faith systems. Think about, Rachmana Litzlan, heaven forfend, the notion of mixed families and the chrismica bushes today. And think no more. Then you'll see exactly what the Torah is talking about. This is the danger. How many people feel that they want to be fulfilled Jews by having faith in Jesus and following mitzvahs? It is an increasingly growing phenomenon, not a diminishing phenomenon. That's an oxymoron. It's an impossibility. Judaism cannot countenance that. And I say that with greatest of respect. I know there's all kinds of people watching out there. I say this with greatest respect to everybody. I have no disrespect for anybody. In fact, anybody who has faith in today's day and age, when for having faith alone you get demonized, I have the greatest of respect for you. That's fine. It's your faith. I have my faith. Thank God I live in Canada. And in this beautiful country, I can practice my faith. You can practice your faith. And we respect each other. What I don't agree or allow is the mixing of chas v'shalom different faiths. No such thing. We are children of Hashem. We follow the Torah. Full stop. Full stop. I don't subscribe to Judeo-Christian values. I don't know what that means. I have Jewish values. If Christian values, very nice. If your Christian values are built on my Jewish values, okay, that's fine. That's fine. But we have our value system. And the notion of Jewish people, chas v'shalom, abandoning Yiddishkeit to embrace this kind of melting pot phenomenon is the dangers of American assimilation that Canada was somewhat protected from. I wonder where that will go in the future. But this is the point. This is what the Vilna Gaon was addressing. And because of this, it turns out that the Vilna Gaon's words really, really, really got traction. So there's a number of people who kind of defended the custom. There's a sefer called Yosef Das. And over there he says, well, there's a prohibition of b'chukaseim leisei lechu. He says, but it's not really a chok. It's not, they're not doing it as an idolatrous thing. Why would they be putting aromatic things? Because it smells nice. It's not idolatrous in nature. It's just decorating. It's nice, just making something nice. He says, that's not a reason not to do it. And so the Yosef Das says, no, we should still do it. And then there's a sefer called Eitz HaChaim, and the Eitz HaChaim says, you shouldn't copy what they do. He says, but Here we're not trying to be like anybody else. We didn't say, how do we make Shavuos look a little better? If a Jew comes along and he makes himself a bush on Hanukkah, that's b'chukas seyom leseleichu. There was never any foliage on Hanukkah. There's nothing to do with Judaism. Bringing foliage into the menorah, that's mamash, a violation. That's literally a violation of the Torah law. But if a Jew is celebrating Shavuos the way he always celebrated Shavuos, somebody else celebrates Shavuos, that's a big deal. Not b'chukas seyom leseleichu. In Das Torah, he says that the only time B'chukaseyom Leiselecho is prohibited is when it is an exact same image. So it's not the same thing. Not the same thing. We don't use the same branches. We don't use the same flowers. Not the same thing. However, my friend Rabbi Weisberg, he went through this very carefully, and he says that these well-intentioned sages did not understand the Gaon. They didn't understand the Vilna Gaon. He was not saying it's a law of B'chukaseyom Leiselecho. And he basically explains, and he demonstrates in a very, very clear way, that B'chukaseyom Leiselecho has two details, two parts. One is that we shouldn't copy the statutes of other nations, period. We should live Jewishly. That's what we want. That's all we want. All we want is people to leave us alone. We want to live Jewishly. The Torah doesn't say... No, he is invoking a biblical maxim. The biblical maxim is B'chukaseyom Leiselecho. It's not different. No. In the Torah, it's just Torah verbiage. The biblical verbiage, b'chukoteim lo selecho, it means all these things. Rashi explains, quoting a sage, it means a whole wide range of things. But here's the point. He says that there's two details in b'chukoteim lo selecho. First of all, it's a general thing. General thing is that we don't follow the statutes of the nations around us. Full stop. And he says if that was what the Vilna Gaon meant, then these other rabbis are right. There's no reason to stop a minhag Yisrael. But he says there's another element, and that element is Avodah Zarah. And if it's an element of Avodah Zarah, he says, that's a different story. Because Avodah Zarah, he says, is something that we have absolutely no countenance, no tolerance for. As he says, and he quotes here a Sifri, which is found in Parsha Shoftim. It says, V'litokim l'cha matzeva. Do not establish for yourself a monument. Listen to the words of the Sifri. Ein li ela matzeva. This only means a monument. Asherah, an oracle, worshipping a tree, Avodah Zarah, iconography, or any kind of actual imagery. Minayin, how do I know? He says, V'dinhu, it's self-understood. Why is it self-understood? Uma matzeva sha'ohuv la'oy avos. What of the matzeva which was beloved in the time of the patriarchs? Snu'a labanim becomes detested for the children. We reject it. The notion of worshipping foreign deities other than God, which was detested by the fathers. How much more so we should reject it. In other words, we're not talking about doing things un-Jewish. We're talking about a question of doing things idolatrously. We're talking about, for us, worshipping anything other than Hashem himself is idolatry. And therefore, since for us that's the case, we don't take chances with things like this. In the Sifri de Beirav, which is a commentary on the Sifri, he says the following. What he means to say is, Minayin, how do we know? Shein lasais lenoi ulekoved b'shum mokem shel kedusha. How do we know we shouldn't create glorious, beautiful edifices, houses of worship that bring honor to God and make it, you know, like everybody else does it? And the answer is, because we're not allowed, and he says, for example, to plant an Asherah. It was customary they would plant these beautiful trees around, and that would create the environment. Because the Torah says, B'chukaseyom Leiselecho. You're not allowed to do it. So what about other things? Just to decorate the house of worship, to make it look more prominent. And the answer is, even afilu shadayti l'shamayim, even if you have the purest of intentions, l'foyer is beisel l'keinu, you want to glorify the house of God. Mikol makim, kiven shagoyim, if it's something that our non-Jewish neighbors are doing, for us, that's verboten. For us, that's out of the question. When we built this shul, so we had to apply for a variance because we're 2 feet higher than the rest, it's a residential area, 2 or 3 feet higher than the roofs are allowed to be. Which actually works very nice because the shul is supposed to be the highest part of the neighborhood, and here it slopes up. So actually, the shul is in a high part, and it is taller than all the other houses, which is actually the way it's supposed to be. That's the halacha. So there was a council person. Everybody in council was very friendly, and the city was very friendly. And the mayor helped us, members of council, very, very good. So there was one person on council, very friendly person, very well intentioned. She said to me, Rabbi, show you the synagogue you're building. It's a box. It's a box, she said. We really need to pass a new variance, and you should build a steeple. You need to have a steeple. And this person was very well-intentioned. They meant well. They wanted to. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that's such a good idea. We don't need a steeple. She says, no, Rabbi, I want your synagogue to be beautiful. You know, in our churches there are steeples, and you should have a steeple, and it should be a big, tall steeple. Uh-huh. And I was like really uncomfortable because this person is well-intentioned and wants to make a synagogue beautiful, and I don't want to offend anybody. Thankfully, one of the other counselors said, you know what, just leave it. They don't need a steeple. We have a steeple. They're a steeple. But that's exactly the point. That's exactly what, because a steeple has become identified with a house of worship of a different faith system, we don't do it. Full stop. And there are plenty of Jewish domes, so we can't say that the dome represents a different faith system, even if a different faith system took domes. But if it would be only in the purview of a different faith system and Jewish people would have stopped making domes, guess what? It wouldn't be allowed to have a dome in a shul either then. Why? Because that's b'chukaseinu le'seleichu. This is exactly the point. So go back now to the synagogue that will be decorated on Shavuos for centuries, maybe for millennia. And all of a sudden it became the way our neighbors are celebrating Pentecost. We got a problem. Said the Vilna Gaon, shut it down. Shut it down. No more. And guess what? A lot of people listened to him. Of all of his minhagim, or of all of his edicts on minhagim, this is probably the number one edict that was accepted. And amazingly, the Vilna Gaon was, you know, the great protagonist of Hasidim. All the Misnagdim. And guess what? Of all the Hasidim, one of the only groups of Hasidim that does not do this in the shul at all is the Chabad Hasidim. Now here I found something very interesting. Listen to this. This is a conversation that took place around the table on the night of Shavuos in the year 1969. In the previous Rebbe's apartment, until 1970, when the previous Rebbe's wife passed on, but until then, the 1971, until then the Rebbe would eat the Yom Tov meals upstairs in the apartment of the Friedrich Rebbe. The previous Rebbe's place was set. The Rebbe sat on the side, as he had always done before as a son-in-law. And there was guests. They invited guests. If there was Hasidim who were away, or people didn't have where to be, and there was guests there. And sometimes the yeshiva students were allowed in, and they could watch what was going on. And many times people had questions, and they would prompt one of the guests to ask a question. So at this point, somebody was prompted to ask a question. And the question was, in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, it says, V'noyegim l'shtoyech asavim b'beis HaKnesses. It's customary to put grass green in the Beis HaKnesses. Is there such a minhag like this? Asking the Rebbe. So the Rebbe says, as a child, I remember in Nikolaev that they did this. Nikolaev was a city where the Rebbe's grandfather was the Dov, a city with a very strong Chabad presence. So one of the elder Hasidim says, but in many places, it's not done. The Rebbe says, the Gabbai of Manchester, England, is here. Let's ask him what the minig is there. Rebbe deflects the question. So the Gabbai of Manchester says, in Manchester, all the synagogues do it except for the Lubavitch synagogue. What do they do here? So the Rebbe says, you're asking what they do here? You are here. So the Manchester Jew, I'm not sure who it is. Oh, it's Rabbi, Mr. Zalman Jaffe. So Mr. Jaffe says, Zalman Jaffe says to the Rebbe, I saw outside there were some flowers planted in front of 770. I thought maybe this was for Shavuos. The Rebbe said that it has nothing to do with the customs of Shavuos whatsoever. That happened to have been planted weeks before Shavuos. It was even planted before Lag BaOmer. It has nothing to do with anything. There was just some landscaping that was going on in front of 770. And that's the end of the question. That's the end of this conversation. So I'm just going to give you my impression of this. My impression of it is somebody wanted to get the Rebbe to comment on this, because it's very strange. The Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch, and in the Luach Kol Chabad, which was arranged by Avraham Chaim Noah, the famous Chabad rabbi in Israel, in Yerushalayim, where he goes through all the customs of Chabad, he says over there that it's customary to do this. But we don't do it. So they wanted the Rebbe to comment. And I find it very compelling that the Rebbe did not comment. He didn't say yes or no. They asked him, what do you do here? What you're asking? it seems to me that the Rebbe did not want to verbally dismiss a Minig Yisrael, especially a Minig Yisrael that many people still do. But at the same time, once it became the custom not to do it for these reasons, the Rebbe didn't want to comment on it. It's like no comment. But my father told me that he remembers as a boy, and he said, I don't know which year this was, and I can't tell you exact details. He said it was somewhere between 1960 and 1964. Somewhere in those years. My father told me he remembers that somebody set up tree branches in 770 in the Rebbe's Beis Medrash. And the Rebbe said they should take it out. That's not the Minhag Chabad. So when it was actually there, the Rebbe commented on it. And I found that it's written, some say that when you have a situation where there's a question of B'chukaseim Le'Selech, or a possible issue of Aveda Zorah, or a Minig Yisrael, what do you do? How do you decide? So we have a principle. Shev va'al tasa odif. Do nothing. In other words, we don't want to say a Minig Yisrael. We don't want to just say it's a custom. Most of the Hasidim do this. Many of the modern Orthodox do it today. So the custom in Germany. There are many Sephardic synagogues who do it today. My grandfather's shul, the Syrian shul, did it. I remember them decorating the whole place with flowers. Many Sephardic shuls do it today. And the truth is, it's very possible that today it's not even an issue. I have no clue what goes on in Pentecost. I have no clue. It's even, if what the Vilna Gaon was worried about is even an issue today. But since Yidden stopped doing it, it was a question of Aveda Zarah, clearly the Rabbeim wanted nothing to do with it. It's a question of idolatry, a question of leaving the frame, that's it, shut it down. But they didn't want to say it. Then the question is it only the trees or is it also the flowers? Is it trees or flowers? So here's, this gets really interesting. Many thought that it must be talking only about trees. In fact, the Mishnah Brura, I think I quoted before, Mishnah Brura says, with regard to this whole question, he says, "Va'agra bitul minigze." The Gra did away with this custom. Mishum sha'achshav u'chayk la'amim, because now it became a statute of other nations. Lahamed ilonois, to put trees up. Now, if you're thinking December, that makes sense. But in fact, if it's Pentecost that's the issue, it's not just trees; it's flowers also. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes. He brings down in the end of chapter 494 of his shulchan, of his table of laws, and then he says, "V'yesh nohagu lahamed ilonis." There are many who have a custom. First, he talks about putting greenery, and he brings down the language of the Rama, "Zeichel l'simchas matan Torah." He says, "V'yesh nohagu lahamed ilonis." Many have a custom of putting trees also. He doesn't go into the reason. Doesn't quote the Magen Avraham's reason, and then he writes, "Omnam." B'doyda shalofanenu, in generations before us, and this is clearly a reference to the Vilna Gaon, bitlu ho'ilanis v'asavim. They did away with trees and greens. Mitaimim sheyodu hagdolim shebedor, for reasons be known to them. My guess is that they couldn't get it printed the way it was written originally. He probably wrote the original reason, and there was a censor, and the censor censored it, and if anything was here was considered to be offensive to Christianity, they would take it out. So he just wrote then, simply, sheyodu, for reasons be known to them. So what is the bottom line? The bottom line is, it is a Minig Yisrael. It has very deep and ancient roots. What exactly is the reason? Until today, nobody really knows. I won't hold back. I'm going to tell you that there are many reasons that are actually given. I only gave you a small sampling of the reasons that are given. I gave you what I thought was the most compelling reasons. There are many, many different reasons that are given. It seems that we do have indication of this, in fact, being ancient. It is written in a number of writings that this is a minig mi me kedem. It says those words, that it is an ancient custom. Logically, it would have to be an ancient custom because when things were observed widely, by communities living in far-flung areas, even in Ashkenaz. It had to have come from an earlier time and had to have different reasons behind it. We may not know all the reasons all the time. However, since in the 18th century, it became a question of whether or not this could lead to a confusion of Judaism or other faith systems or mix us with the nations around us, because of that, the Vilna Gaon put it to an end. And when there's a question of anything which is a possible issue of Aveda Zorah, not just B'chukaseim, emphasis on Aveda Zorah. So then we say, we're going to sit this one out. And the Minchas Elazar, the great Rebbe of Munkach, who passed away just before the Holocaust, just before the war, he says, and I'll leave you with this, Minig ha'olam me'oz. It's a custom that we have, me'oz. You know what the word me'oz means?
Forever.
Forever, he says. Lahamed ilonais b'shavuos, to put trees. Aval ke'es ha'minig b'rev kehilas ha'chassidim v'anshe ma'isa. But now the custom for most groups of Hasidim and people of action is shev v'al taseh. Stay put. Inaction is sometimes the best course of action. You don't want to do anything. You don't want to go against. You don't want to say inaction. And like it says in the Ma'aseh Rav, he brings down that the Vilna Gaon was meinei this, that he stopped it. But interestingly, his verbiage is shev al taseh. And from the conversation, which is printed in his book, HaMelech Memesibay, which is they collected from different notes that people wrote, and they put it together in the book, the conversations that happened around this table for 20 years during Yom Tov. Seems to me the conversation is precise. You see what the Minig HaLoza says, b'shev al taseh, the Rebbe was careful not to say yay or nay. Simply, here, that, no, that's not it. When there was an actual issue of trees in, my father told me he remembers, the Rebbe said take it out. So if it was an actual issue, it wasn't going to be, but otherwise it simply wasn't spoken about. Now, does this prevent us from bringing flowers into a house? I think not, because the issue of the whole Pentecost issue was Avodah Zarah, not just B'chukeseyim. So in December, indeed, people decorate their homes. But to the best of my knowledge, Pentecost is not a time when people decorate their homes. It's a decorated house of worship. And it is actually a Minig Yisrael, which I think just about everybody observes, to have flowers in their home, to beautify the home in honor of Shavuos, for whatever myriad of reasons there may or may not be. Ultimately, it's Minig Yisrael. And as long as Minig Yisrael doesn't present us with issues or problems, Toydehi, it's something that's Torah, and we have to hold fast to it. May Hashem help that we should all have a wonderful Shavuos, as in the language of the Rebbe, that we should have Kabbalas HaTorah, we should be able to receive the Torah, b'simcha u'b'pnimius, with a sense of joy and sincere inwardness, and we should be zeicha Emir Hashem this year, not only to get the Torah all over again for the 3,331st time, but we should be zeicha, we should merit to see the Torah Chadosha Me'iti Teitze, the new revelation of Torah that will come with Mashiach b'mheira u'b'yameinu. Amen. Pretty cool stuff, eh?